This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Golic and Wingo with you, ESPN Radio, ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests, they join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr., Trey Wingo here, and I'm going to recreate the opening scene. Well, let me be clear. Parts of the opening scene. I'm forgetting Sarah Marshall. Let's talk about it.
Let's make sure we pick very clearly what parts.
As I said, we're not going to recreate. We're just going to use the dialogue. We're not going to actually recreate the scene.
There we go. We'll go with a table read. A table read for this one to start things off. Whoa, my first day back, man. Ease into it.
Welcome back, sweetie.
Oh, my God.
Let's talk about it because it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And, of course, the news dropping yesterday that after the Hall of Fame game had been canceled and the Hall of Fame induction ceremony or enshrinement ceremony had been postponed, the NFL has now canceled or shortened the preseason, however you want to slice it. The first two preseason games, as it stands right now, preseason week one will be August 20th through 24th. Preseason week two will be 27th through the 31st of August. And then again, the kickoff of the regular season still set to begin September 10th when the Chiefs host the Texans in the most delicious way that the NFL could just stick the knife in the Texans a little bit longer. Remember that 24-point lead at Arrowhead the last time you were here? Welcome back to Arrowhead on September 10th.
Remember all those trades you made this offseason? What if I told you it gets worse?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Chiefs Thunderdome.
What happened there? So this is not surprising on a couple of levels. Number one, this was something that the NFL had floated out before as part of a CBA and part of a training and part of an agreement that, look, we'll shorten preseason if you give us 18 regular season games and all that kind of stuff. So the idea that the NFL has been willing to sacrifice preseason games, it should not shock you in any way, shape, or form. In fact, I would argue, Mike, that this might be the new norm going forward, even without it being a COVID-related issue. In fact, don't be surprised if last year was the last time we ever saw four preseason games.
Well, and I think that had been part of the mechanism that everyone expects to be triggered next year, where the owners can institute that 17-game regular season in 2021 and remove, at the time, I think it was just one preseason game. It was going to go to three preseason games, but people could look and like what they see here, because there are certain groups that have been clamoring this for a while, not even just on the ownership side, certainly the veteran players groups as well.
Listen, the players that are really needed for the four preseason games are the undrafted free agents, right? That's basically who these are for. The back, six, seven slots on your roster? Those are the people. That's the group that really needs those extra reps in those preseason games. And some quarterbacks have come out of this. Kurt Warner, Tony Romo. Those kind of quarterbacks are the ones that have really benefited from having all those reps in preseason to give them just enough of a glimpse to hang on and then find a way to eventually make it into the NFL. But all that being said, this is done with one specific purpose in place in 2020. Let's extend the runway as long as we possibly can, because this is all about one thing, because the NFL has said from day one, when all this came out, full steam ahead, business as usual. We'll do free agency when we normally do it. We'll do the draft, albeit differently than we normally do it. We did cancel the OTAs and the mini camps. We're not going to open training camps on time. All of this is done with one purpose in mind, to play a full regular season. And our own Ryan Clark on the 5 o'clock Sports Center yesterday gave his odds of that actually happening.
I don't think they should play a full season. I don't think we should be looking for a full season. I think it should be much like baseball has done, like basketball will do when they come back. And I know that we're in the middle of those seasons right now during the pandemic, and football will be different. But let's try to limit some of the contact. Let's try to put people at risk less if we possibly can. And I think that could be a move that the NFL could make. Also, if they come out right now and say they're going to play 12 games or 14 games, and then they're actually able to do that, then it's not a black eye to the league for trying to force their players to do too much.
So all of this is time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Do you believe that we'll see any preseason games?
I think so, just because I think in all of this, and we're seeing it in the NBA with, you know, and part of this is the playoff seeding, but also you've got regular season games. Like, I think before you get to the high stakes poker, you need a couple of hands to kind of warm this thing up, to try and go through, just if nothing else. Like, so much of preseason, you mentioned, is certainly about guys making the back end of rosters, but the reason you sort of dress up that third preseason game is just as much to go through the game day process, to get everyone acclimated with, this is how our team does business on game day, when we really ramp it up and treat this thing, because those are the weeks that you actually game plan during training camp. You'll actually try and go about it like you would, so the veteran players get that taste for their little bit of that game before you pull them out again in all this. I think the difference in this year, in knowing your protocol going into a game of, all right, how are we going to have to do things in a COVID-19 world as we get ready to play a football game? People talk about football shape. It's just as much about football process in my mind. And I think you're going to need one crack at that before things get real, so that you don't have the potential for any number of things that can happen during a pandemic before a real life NFL football game that has meaning and value.
Couple of things. First and foremost, I have been a big believer in what my friend, my longtime friend and our longtime colleague here, Mark Schlereth, has always said about preseason. It may not count, but it matters. Like, there's no way to actually prepare for playing football, to get ready to play football than by playing football. That's part of it, right? I mean, what does a quarterback always say? Well, I got that first hit. I feel good. Once I got that first hit, I knew I was in a game and everything was good to roll. So that's my longstanding belief, that you have to have some sort of warm-up, for lack of a better term. That being said, I would bet a lot of money that the grand total of preseason games we see in 2020 would be 0.00. Because the NFL is going to do whatever it needs to make sure that game, September 10th, Thursday night, Chiefs, Thunderdome, Texans, goes off as planned. And if they have to sacrifice two more preseason games to make sure everybody is good to go, that's exactly what's going to happen. Because we are, as we all said, it is a different year and a different time. The whole thing is to make sure the NFL season starts when it begins, and they are going to do whatever it takes to make sure that that game, not these two preseason games, that game starts on September 10th.
And I think you could still make that game start on September 10th, especially at least going through the first round of preseason games there, because you would then, in theory, have the time for any two-week quarantine period that you would need and all this. Now, I understand that would make it very difficult to game plan, so maybe there's something to that, but I think at some point, you're probably right. Like, we shouldn't be. Listen, everything's a 50-50 shot at this point. Like, you can convince me of any scenario for right. The NFL, and I'd say it would have value and possibility in all of this. But when I look at this, I just go, all right, like, what might actually work the best? That I'm not sure, because there could be something to learning how to go through all these procedures, not for the first time in scenarios. Like, forget, like, people are, like, the unfortunate side effect of this is people are going to get hurt, and probably a lot of them.
Yep.
Like, the downside on, like, everyone who is happy about this, NFL veterans who have hated training camp for a long time and don't think it's got nearly as much value as the length of time it takes up would necessitate in all that one. Defensive linemen, pumped, because they are going to be at a huge advantage to start this season. And I'd like to see if there's any I'm always curious at this, because I think since the last CBA, you've seen basically a preseason along offensive lines for the first 4 weeks of the season. Like, it is just a position that, as you remove time on the field getting ready for it, is going to suffer because it requires a lot more communication than almost anything else.
Correct.
In ways that are valuable.
It's the most collective unit on the field.
So stock up for defensive linemen. People are sad. Offensive line coach, late round draft picks and undrafted free agents, and athletic training staffs and hamstrings.
Yeah.
Like, we talk about soft tissue injuries, you add the violence of football to all that, and you're going to see it in droves through the first, you know, hopefully quarter. Like, the quarter of this season, that would be a blessing, but this is a chance to be ugly football. You just hope it's not ugly and even more destructive on the bodies involved in all this. Because, like, I saw those dates to come back to this, and you're talking about basically, what, like a little over a month preseason before you start doing stuff? And that's without having done anything up to it. Like, all the acclimatization stuff they're talking about is usually what takes place in OTAs. Like, training camp acclimatization is like, all right, we go out there for like one or two helmets practices, and then we go out there for like one or two practices and just shells and just shoulder pads without anything else. And then after that, you're clanging and banging. Like, I forget what the exact format is under the CBA, but it is not usually as long a runway as I have a feeling you're going to get this year, where at the beginning it is going to be, yeah, we're going to acclimatize how we do this hitting-wise and contact-wise for more than just the safety of players. Like, they're all going to be figuring out how the hell we social distance all these drills.
Well, listen, you weren't here the last couple of days, but I was texting with a current player, And I said, what do you think? And he goes, I think we start on time and then we get together and all hell breaks loose. I mean, they are preparing for the scenario. Some players are preparing for, look, we'll get together and then we've all sort of been doing our own thing for a while here and I have no idea how this is going to work and I have no idea how many of my teammates have been doing the proper things and staying away from certain spots because we're all coming in from different places of the country. And then again, you can't social distance and play this game. There's no way, shape, or form. So to me, what we're seeing here is a continuation of what's been going on the last couple of years anyway. What have we heard from coaches? You know what? Honestly, live practices with another team is probably better than a preseason game anyway. It gives us a lot of that same juice and that same rhythm that we would get out of a preseason game without all the other issues involved. That being said, we're not going to have that this year either. There will be no joint practice. They are doing everything they can to make sure nobody does anything more than that is the absolute minimum necessary to get to that first week. And I think that what we've seen the last few years in September anyway has sort of been a preseason, right? I mean, there are certain teams that come out and play pretty well, specifically the Patriots last year for the first two games when they beat up on Pittsburgh and then, what, throttled Miami 59-0. And then the Ravens also had a really good start in September season. But so many teams over the last couple of years anyway have really used the first couple of weeks of the regular season to get where they want to be anyway, and I just think that's going to be magnified this year.
Well, I think it's going to bury some teams in holes they can't come out of this year. Like, we talk about the Chiefs and all that. Like, you're bringing back essentially that entire team, depending on what happens with one player that we'll talk about here in a second. But when you, like, bring back those kind of groups and you're able to maybe put some distance between yourself and everybody else early because you do have continuity in a way. Like, that's why Tom Brady and Cam Newton and all these people are going out there and working out with their teammates in a way that forsakes anything any NFL doctor will tell you is they know how far behind the eight ball they are relative to the Saints, relative to the Chiefs, relative to the Niners, and all these teams that bring back a cavalcade of talent that were successful last year. So that's why you're seeing all these people go, yeah, your rules don't mean a hell of a lot to me because at some point I still have to do my job and I don't know how well I'm going to be able to do it without all the stuff I'm used to.
Listen, you're 100% right, and I think that we're just going to have to accept that this year the September football may look a little cray-cray, may look a little crazy with sort of the things we see.
Like, this year we basically have to reserve, like, we cannot be griping about whatever sports product we get because we're working with a half-stock kitchen at this point, and that's being generous, and the entire thing is under attack at all times. Like you mentioned, it's going to start and then all hell is going to break loose. What we're seeing kind of with every league right now, everyone that started back up, is at some point you're going to get answers that you really don't like.
Yeah.
And short of, we got to fold this up and stop, what your response is going to be and how ready you are for that counterpunch is going to be the only way that any of these seasons have a chance of surviving.
Yeah, and so that's why I think everything is on this. Everything is on the table. Everything is on the, I literally, look, I could be wrong. I would be shocked if we see any preseason games this year going forward. And all of that is straight talk wireless, no contract, no compromise. All right, you mentioned veteran teams that are bringing almost everybody back. The Saints are certainly one of those teams. The 49ers, for the most part, are one of those teams. Kansas City Chiefs are definitely one of those teams. They almost have everybody coming back unless someone decides not to be there. And that would be defensive tackle Chris Jones, who yesterday in a USA Today article basically played his Le'Veon Bell card. He's like, I'm not going to play without a long-term deal. They have until, what, 10 days, 11 days now?
July 15th.
To get a long-term deal done. Otherwise, he's going to play under the franchise tag. And he basically said, I talked to Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell talked to me about it, said, I may play my Le'Veon Bell card and not play. Do you think he's going to go down that road?
I don't know Chris Jones well enough to know what he's going to do, but he is in the best position to maybe do this and not feel the drawback. Like, Le'Veon's whole point to do this was to do it and get paid and get a market-setting deal, which in some ways he did, but a lot of people think he left real money on the table. With everything we just talked about as the backdrop, with a global pandemic as the backdrop of the season, if you were going to tell me Chris Jones, who is 26 years old right now, so he is, if we're looking at the criteria for this, he is young. Chris Jones, who is extremely productive in a spot that is increasingly gaining value in the NFL right now, and probably, I shouldn't say gaining value, but being valued in the NFL, thanks in large part to what guys like Aaron Donald have done over the course of this. And then, I guess in all of that, able to weather the storm in a lot of that, playing a position, and that's kind of tied into the last part, playing a position that is vital enough for people to still pay on the back end. And if we're seeing contracts handed out to guys like Grady Jarrett, certainly Aaron Donald, in his own stratosphere, it would reason to believe that if he sat this season, preserved his health for a year in one of the most uncertain years in NFL history, and came out on the other side, he's probably getting that $20-plus million a year contract long-term he's looking for.
Well, what's interesting here, you're right. Like, in a normal year, I think he would absolutely play, but in depending on what this happens, it may make actually be beneficial for him to sit this year out. But you mentioned Aaron Donald, right? So just so people understand, and if you watch the Super Bowl and their playoff run, when Chris Jones was on the field, they were a different defense. They absolutely were. Over the last two seasons, Chris Jones has 23.5 sacks when lined up as a defensive tackle, which trails only Aaron Donald. Jones has 72 pressures when lined up as a defensive tackle, which trails only Aaron Donald. He has a 20.4% pass rush win rate. Well, we need the sounder on that one. The pass rush win rate, which ranks third behind only Aaron Donald and Grady Jarrett. By the way, a win is when you beat your block within 2.5 seconds. It's an ESPN pass rush metric powered by Next Gen Stats. So we're talking about a guy who is that much of a difference maker. And what did he have, like three batted passes in the Super Bowl, specifically the one that set up the game-winning or the go-ahead score for the Kansas City Chiefs after they'd had the touchdown to make it close. And then he batted down the ball on second down after the the Niners ripped off, 7 or 8 yards on first down. I mean, that's the kind of player we're talking about.
He's a great defensive player. Is he another, because the Chiefs already have and already paid Frank Clark to be your $20-plus million a year defensive player? We have talked so much over the course of time about the difficulty of having a defensive player like that when you're also going to have to play a quarterback like that, and now to potentially have two of those guys in there. And I know the NFL Network was the first to report this, that Chris Jones viewed himself as a $20-plus million a year guy.
Same.
And if the Chiefs don't or can't, because that's two different things, like what their limits, they reworked Sammy Watkins' deal this offseason and certainly made some of that. But I think when you look at all that, you still don't have a lot of runway because of what you did. Like, you decided last year that Frank Clark was supposed to be your guy on defense.
And to be fair, while he had an up and down regular season, he was great in the postseason. I think he closed out all three games that they played with essentially a sack that sealed the game in Frank Clark. He did it against the Texans, he did it against the Titans, and he did it in the Super Bowl, which set up the last score, but that basically ended the game.
And with uncertainty around what the cap's going to look like next year, as we've talked about in a number of instances, and knowing paying Mahomes is your priority, keeping Tyreek Hill is probably more of a priority the way this league has gone, it might not just work out in Kansas City, which is fine in all of this. The question is, are they going to get one more year of his services, you know, just over $16 million, or is he going to kind of look at this as a business proposition, like we've seen certain Major League Baseball players do, like we're seeing some NBA players do right now, and say, you know what, maybe it's better off for me to not go in a situation where soft tissue injuries are probably going to be up and all of this is going to be uncertain, and for everyone to say, all right, we've got this great guy who would be 27 years old then, who plays a position that's becoming more of a premium position, and just let it fly next year.
By the way, here's Bill Barnwell, does great work for us, and his columns on ESPN are always fantastic. He also does the Bill Barnwell Show podcast. He was on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt, basically lining up what you just said, Junior, how difficult it would be for the Chiefs right now to pay Chris Jones.
This is a guy who I thought was the Super Bowl MVP. He was that impactful in that second half comeback. But for Chris Jones, you look at the numbers, he does not actually stand out as a really significant defender. Look at the Chiefs defense when Chris Jones is on the field and Chris Jones is off the field. They have a better sack rate and a better pressure rate when Chris Jones is off the field, which doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense.
No.
Look at the running game. They average 5.3 yards per carry allowed when Chris Jones is on the football field. 4.3 yards per carry allowed when he's off the field. Teams do target him in the running game because he's someone who tries to get pressure at the quarterback, even if it means maybe losing a gap responsibility here or there. I think Chris Jones is a very talented football player. I think he can be a difference maker. But when you have Mahomes, when you have Tyreek Hill, when you have all these players who want significant sums of money, can you really afford to pay Chris Jones $20 million a year? I don't think the Chiefs can.
Well, that's the issue, because the Mahomes contract looms over all of this. Real quickly about the metrics and some of the things that Bill said. And he's right when you look at the numbers. But at the end of the day, sometimes the eye test matters, right? We saw the AFC Championship game the year before, which was at Arrowhead. And as soon as Chris Jones left the field, Tom Brady and the Patriots could do whatever they want in that situation. And that was a huge loss. So I understand what he's saying in terms of the metrics. Chris Jones is still a difference maker if you just watch the tape.
And there are other metrics I've seen that show that Chris Jones was actually a much improved and much more interested run defender
yes.
over the course of last season. There are all these ways that you can stack it up. And you're right. The Chiefs team we talked about, the difference of 2018 when they didn't go on to do the things we expected them to do in the playoffs, and 2019 where they hoisted Lombardi, in some people's minds was, we said the defense needs to just go out there and not be 32nd in the league,
right,
and not punt on this. And you go out in 2019, and listen, Tyrann Mathieu helped that out a lot. Frank
Big
Clark's
time.
Late run, as you mentioned, talked about that a lot. And certainly Chris Jones was vital to all of that. But as you're looking at this, you've got to make decisions. And in my mind, they kind of made this decision last year. Like, once you traded for and handed Frank Clark that money, you knew you were going to make this difficult. And then a global pandemic heightened the nature of that.
Yes or no, does he play this year?
I'll say yes, because $16 million is a lot to walk away from. But I think he's in the perfect position to say no. And I would love to see a player with a more valued position than running back try this out for real.
Right. I think it's an interesting test. And I think, like you said, I think he has the best case for it. But I still think it's hard for anybody to walk away from $16 million, especially a guy who's been hurt a little bit over the last couple of years.
Golic
and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr. You may know him as the head coach of the Toronto Raptors. I prefer to introduce him cases as the former coach of the Derby Rams, the Birmingham Bullets, the Telinda Ostendi, the Manchester Giants, the London Towers, the Oklahoma Storm, the Brighton Bears, the Iowa Energy, and the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, none other than the defending NBA champions head coach, Nick Nurse. I love having you on just to read that resume every time. Just know that it warms my heart, Nick.
You're staying consistent. I love it. Stay hot. Let's stay hot, man. Let's go.
That's all we can do. We're doing great, Nick. More importantly, how are you and how is the team? Because you guys have had to do the double bubble, basically. Crossing the border from Canada, you had to bubble in Fort Myers before you start to immerse yourself into the bubble in Orlando. How has this process been for you?
It's been good. I'm going to start using that double bubble. We've been using the pre-bubble bubble, but now we're we're good. It's been going, I think, as well as expected. Guys look great to me physically, mentally. They've been enjoyable to be around. We're testing like crazy. Feel safe, which is really the one and only goal we have here, is to try to stay safe and get this testing out of the way, get a few shots up here and there, and then get to Orlando safely,
And Coach, as you've talked to players, we know and we've heard so much about the plans going into the NBA bubble in Orlando, the things that are going to be going into that. As you've now been back around your team inside the double bubble, as we're now calling it, have there been reservations that they've brought up that maybe they weren't aware of before until they got down there, or that you guys didn't touch on in Zoom meetings or anything that you've had before, reservations that they've got about heading into this?
Not really. I think that everything takes a little, first education. We got to kind of tell them this is what we're doing and why, and then it kind of a day goes by and you'll do a few things. I mean, listen, I know I normally, I got out of my room the first day, kind of racing to the first meeting, and took about 7 steps and left my mask in my room, and it's just kind of the habits. And then Now we've been here a week, and you're kind of into the rhythm. You get up in the morning, go get tested, you get your temperature checked, you fill out your little thing, and it's kind of becoming part of the rhythm and what you're getting used to. I astonishingly, like, they stick that big swab up your nose or whatever, and it doesn't even bother you anymore after tears coming down your face the first few times. It's like you even get used to that after doing it on a regular basis.
Nick Nurse with us, the Raptors head coach, as they're beginning soon their defense of their NBA championship and in the bubble in Fort Myers, because they had to cross the border first and stay there before they can go anywhere else. So we heard sound from Fred VanVleet on the other day, Coach, and he basically said the timing of this sucks, basically referring to everything that's going on in this country with the pandemic. And obviously the massive cry for change in the way people of color are dealt with, and the racial injustice and systemic racism that has been in this country for so long. When you hear someone like that, who is a big part of your team, say that, we've talked a lot with coaches earlier about the idea of the mental challenge of being a head coach in this bubble environment, and then you add on all those other things that are going on. What's the challenge for you? How are you going to go about that and keep them mentally in it as much as possible?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I'm thinking about is being really open-minded. I think your plans are it's fine to have some plans, but I think there's going to be a lot of, you got to be comfortable getting off that playbook and maybe doing something else, right? And just kind of really, really having some feel and connection with what's happening in the moment each day. You know, things may change, and you may say, hey, you know, geez, normally we'd have two film sessions and a practice and another walkthrough. And you may, some of that stuff may not roll out the same, but you know, the ball's going to go up anyway. And, you know, maybe a guy will be out here and there, but that's, you know, we go through not having players through injury. This is obviously a lot different and much more unknown, but I think being open-minded to change course of action quickly you know, just accepting what is and still trying to put your best effort out there, you know, each and every day.
Nick, you mentioned not being able to necessarily do all the things you'd normally want to do in a basketball sense. We've heard that from other leagues now, as the NFL has announced it's already canceling two of the preseason games they would normally have over the course of this. From a basketball sense, what's the most essential thing for you at this point? Like, from a basketball sense, what are you and your team going to absolutely need in order to feel like you're ready enough to go compete here?
Well, I think the conditioning, I know it sounds really obvious, right? But the conditioning is going to need to get ramped up and get to a place. I mean, you know, when those playoff games start, there's a heck of a lot of energy and a lot of speed and guys are moving really fast, you know? So being able to do that over a sustained period, you know, you get into playoff games, some of those guys are inching up, you know, 40 plus minutes, et cetera. And I would say they're a long ways away from that right now, just because of the simple fact that you cannot really get in that shape unless you're doing it through basketball games. And, you know, that's probably the main concern, but we got time. Like I said, physically, our guys look great. If you want to put a positive spin on it, they're probably healthier than they've ever been. There's a lot of time in the hotel, which is spent resting. You know, you got to kind of be in your hotel room a lot. So there is some positives too. You know, you can go work hard and you kind of confine to your hotel room, but you're probably going to recuperate during a lot of that time too. So, you know, we're trying to, as much as we can, look at the half full side of things as much as we can, you know.
Raptors head coach Nick Nurse with us here on Golic and Wingo. And that is interesting. And you mentioned guys coming in, you know, healthier, in better shape. Does this feel like training camp at all? Like, how does it compare to that, especially coming off what's supposed to be a continuation of the season that you've already played the majority of?
Yeah, it certainly has a training camp feel to it. It's kind of interesting because I think there's a training camp feel with the newness and guys, you know, haven't seen them for a while and things like that. But there's also some history, you know, you kind of got your same group of guys and you know what they've done, kind of what they're capable of. I think you're always looking up to a ceiling of where they can get better, et cetera. So there's almost a much, there's a little more sure factor there, right? You're so unsure at the start of each season when you've even changed, you know, three or four players, what's this team going to come out like and be like, and what's their identity going to be. But there's some identity formed already, right? But then you're kind of going back to square one with the physical part of it and the rhythm part of it and getting them back together and see if you can get back to those same rhythms that you had when you left.
And I guess, yeah, from your perspective too, because we hear so much, especially down the stretch of an NBA season, that from a coaching standpoint, you guys are ironing out a lot of the things rotation-wise that you're going to see in the playoffs, or defensively what you're going to do for certain teams. Are these last few regular season games that everyone's going to play leading up to it, is that going to be more valuable or valued the same as what you just mentioned, the things that you already learned over the course of this season?
Well, I think there's certainly some value in it, right? It depends on what happens. You know, I think that, you know, you could get guys out there playing short minutes or short, you know, not similar rotations to what they'll use once the playoffs start, or even not see some guys. You know, if you're going to get some familiarity with the team, you're going to need to see it as it's going to be as closely as possible. So I think there is some value to seeing some of these teams again, right, up close and going through the scouts and all that stuff. Just kind of depends how it all plays out to how valuable it'll be.
Nick Nurse with us, Raptors head coach, as he prepares to do the second part of his bubble transition as the Raptors try and defend their NBA championship. We heard Damian Lillard of the Blazers basically come out and say there's no way everybody's following this protocol. And obviously we understand the all-in factor is going to be different on what your realistic expectations are for the possibility of you getting to the end of this thing and winning it all. And clearly you guys as the second seed in the East have a different agenda and a different mindset than someone, say, on the Trailblazers who are struggling to try and potentially get in to that final playoff spot in the West. But, Nick, for everyone to have a chance to win, everybody has to buy in. So when you hear someone like Damian say that, what are your levels of concern that the bubble, or as our own Taylor Twellman called it, a mesh hat with – some escape routes, for lack of a better term. What are your levels of concern that some of those things might be compromised?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's everything's a concern, right? Really, I mean, when this pandemic broke out, anytime you even had to go to the grocery store to get your essential foods, you were kind of wondering, you know, if you were coming back, going to come back okay, right? I think that's the level of unsure, level of, you know, things you were hearing, et cetera. So, I mean, listen, for the most part, I think that our guys, I think here so far in 8 or 9, 10 days have grown accustomed to this, to the deal and what we've asked them to do. I don't think anybody's going to be perfect. I think that, there's some reasonable, risk, but there's also a lot of things going on. I mean, the extensiveness of what we're doing, as far as, you know, player come in and cleaning the court, and each player only has his own ball all the whole time we're here. You know, there's so many levels of things that we're doing to try to stay safe. I think we're doing as much as we can do, and I'm sure the NBA in the bubble in Orlando is going to be as safe as they can make it. There's no doubt about that. You know, on that sense, everybody's got to buy in. Everybody's got to do it together. It's kind of our league that we're trying to get to a point here. And I think there's going to be some great basketball. I mean, the sense that I'm getting from our guys is they're really ready and eager and hungry to play. I would assume that there's a heck of a lot of other teams that have the same vibe going on in their you know, coming back to market right now. So I think we're going to see some great basketball at the end of it.
And Nick, we have to ask you this question because this has been a hot topic of debate ever since the bubble format was sort of announced, and uh-huh. Now we're going to have this sprint to a championship after a sprint to finish the regular season. And some people have said, you know, oh, you know, the way this thing is going, whoever wins this thing, there's going to be an asterisk next to their game because it wasn't done the regular way. So you've won it the regular way last year. You know what it takes to win an NBA championship, and the playoffs are going to be very different this time around than they have been in every other year, where there's travel and there's layoffs and there's games in between. All of this is going to be at a much faster pace. So what do you think when someone says, or what is your opinion when someone says, oh, this season, if someone wins it, there's going to be an asterisk next to the champion?
Well, if we win it, you can put 10 asterisks by it if you want to. I don't care. I think, man, we're going against the best teams in the world. I think everybody's going to be ready. Like I said, I think the basketball is going to be great. Sure, it's different, but I almost make the asterisk thing almost a unique. I think it'd be a unique title to have, and something that's going to be really hard fought and under tougher circumstances maybe than normal. So I think it's I don't know if I think it doesn't bother me either way.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said I think this will be tougher because of the lack of day off and the lack of things where players can get away. I mean, I think mentally it's going to be much more difficult this time around.
Yeah, I think there's certainly going to be a lot of different challenges, right? And I think you're going to have to – I would imagine you're going to have to really have a team – mentally tough and stick together and have things go your way. In any championship run, you know, the ball's got to bounce your way. You know, you got to fight through some serious ups and downs. You know, it's a long grind, as you know, 2 months long when the playoffs start to while they end. It's a bit shorter this time, but in a sense, it's very similar.
Well, listen, if anybody knows about the grind and getting prepared and overcoming things, it's someone who's been the Derby Rams coach, the Birmingham Bullets coach, the Brighton Bears coach, and the coach of the NBA champion Toronto Raptors, Nick Nurse. Nick, as always, man, we appreciate your time, and maybe we'll check back in once you're in the second bubble. But best of luck going forward, okay?
Okay, guys. Have a great day. Thank you so much.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
Field, first and foremost, thanks for being with us. And this was the most Bill Belichick move of all time, right? Pennies on the dollar for a former NFL MVP.
So here's what I'm going to do, Trey. I'm Bill Belichick, and I'm going to go through the free agency process. I'm going to go through the draft. I'm going to let everybody make a couple of moves after the draft. I'm going to be sitting there just waiting in the weeds. And then all of a sudden, there's going to be a 31-year-old, excellent, transcendent-type talent who's available to play for the minimum salary. And I'm just going to go ahead and sign him. Yeah, that is the most Bill Belichick move of all time. And I laugh because it was out of nowhere to many. Obviously, Shefty and Mort reported it, and they had been working on the story in advance of the news coming out. But I literally had multiple members of the Patriots coaching staff text me after that story broke. Like, did that really just happen? Like, is that a real tweet from Shefty and Mort? That is how out of the blue this signing was. Wow. To some people, not everybody, but to some people, even as close as part of the organization.
That's crazy.
I bet Bill's dog knew about this all along as he stole the show in the draft. Field, I can pencil this guy in as the week one starter at this point, right? We've heard a lot made about New England's system, him coming in this late in the game, all the things surrounding the pandemic that have made player acquisition difficult this offseason, and certainly Cam Newton's free agency difficult this offseason. But he is going to be the one lining up under center for week one, is he not?
Yeah, I think so. And, like, to me, that would – here's the only circumstances under which it doesn't happen, Gojo. One would be if he's just not healthy, which all indications seem to be – I know Stefania Bell has said this as much, that, like, he is trending towards 100% health to begin the season. If he's not, then obviously that complicates things. And the only other circumstance would be, like, an abomination of a training camp, right? Like, Teddy Bridgewater may have signed with the Panthers in March, but like how much further along is Teddy Bridgewater than Cam Newton, given the fact that he hasn't taken a single snap in front of his new head coach and offensive coordinator in Carolina? So I would say, like, as much as we are discussing Teddy Bridgewater as a certainty or other quarterbacks that have signed with the new team this offseason, like, I feel like we should sort of be talking about Cam Newton in that same light. Cam will be the starter absent very unique circumstances come week one.
All right, so Field, what are realistic expectations here? Because, you know, when the signing first went down, the first thing I went to was that Thursday night game on the short season when Tom was serving the four-game suspension, where Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt against the Dolphins. Jacoby Brissett went in there, and boom, lo and behold, they had 8 design quarterback runs for 48 yards. How much do you think they're going to try and take advantage and adapt that offense to that part of what Cam does well?
You know, remember early on in Cam's career where the narrative or the discussion was always like, how much is too much with Cam? And, you know, there was the hits were piling up, and eventually there were some injuries that did impact Cam. But I think we're going to have some of that conversation, Trey, but I still think, as Cam would say earlier on in his career, is like, you've got to let Cam be Cam, right? You got to let him do what he does best. So I expect the Patriots to have a healthy dose of design runs for Cam Newton. And I think you'll also see the Patriots use Cam's rushing ability as sort of a, you know, this is arithmetic, right? Like, you've got the numbers advantage when you have a quarterback who can run. It's sort of like having an extra blocker in the formation or as part of each play that you design and scheme up. So I don't expect the Patriots to try to make Cam exclusively a drop back passer. Now, obviously you have to be mindful of any player who's gone through 2 major injuries and surgeries in recent years, but I expect the Patriots to be super creative, and you're right, like, that Jacoby Brissett start, again, on literally 4 days of preparation, so basically 2 days of practice, I don't think either of which even had pads on, and Jacoby Brissett had 8 designed quarterback runs, he had the longest touchdown run by a Patriots quarterback in 40 years, and he had the longest run, period, from the Patriots since at least 2001. So I think the Patriots are always going to look at a player's strengths and say, hey, we're going to make the most out of whatever those strengths are. Signing Cam Newton and not planning to maximize his uncommon athletic ability is not even worth signing.
Talking to Field Yates with us here on Golic and Wingo. So, Field, does any of what you just described, his unique ability, such an otherworldly skill set, translate into anything in the way of a viable fantasy quarterback this coming season as people are hopefully getting ready to have their draft still potentially?
Oh, yes, it sure does. So there's only one reason why I've hedged a little bit on Cam, and that is, as I said at the beginning, is just once we know he's healthy, and that might only take, like, well, I don't know if we're even going to have preseason games, but let's, or if he would even play in a preseason game, but as we already know, there have already been it's been reduced to 2 games for the preseason. And we saw Brandon McManus, the Broncos PA rep, amongst other players, suggested there may be 1 or 0 preseason games. But I just need to get a little bit more affirmation that Cam is 100%, and maybe sort of like a see it to believe it. Otherwise, though, I think you're going to find Cam being drafted amongst the top 10 or so quarterbacks. And if you take away last year, which obviously only played 2 games, in his first 8 seasons, Cam finished on a points-per-game basis in the top 8 of quarterbacks 7 out of 8 years. Now, he also had 5 top 4 finishes. So Cam Newton in fantasy football is basically as good as gold. And if you just look at the way the game has trended recently with so many quarterbacks that are able to use their legs, last year, 9 of the top 10 scoring quarterbacks had at least 200 rushing yards. Now, I don't think that if you draft Cam and you expect him to be dynamic as a runner, you're hoping for just 200 rushing yards, but it shows that, you know, it's harder for guys like Phillip Rivers or Tom Brady, who operate almost exclusively out of the pocket, to consistently put up the same fantasy numbers as guys who, even if their overall stats are sometimes ugly, like, you're going to have plenty of opportunities if you're Tyrod Taylor is a starter in Los Angeles. Even Daniel Jones is a very good runner for the New York Giants. That can raise the floor. So I think Cam has all sorts of potential here in fantasy football this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up about the preseason, because we were talking about it earlier. And I said I would be shocked, Field, if they play any preseason games this year. This is just the first of what I believe will be the ultimate cancellation of preseason, because the NFL is about doing whatever it takes necessary to make sure that September 10th game goes off between the Chiefs and the Texans on that Thursday night. And they will sacrifice everything they need to make sure that that game is played.
I think so, too. And we're sitting here on July 2nd. We're 4 weeks away from the resumption of regular season games in the NBA. And at least all the chatter that I have heard and all the media I've consumed, it feels like the tenor from the NBA quickly shifted from, all right, we've got our plan with the bubble, to, oh, man, can we at least make it to the bubble? Because if we make it to the bubble, game on. At least we hope game on. I think with the NFL, the same sort of mindset is in place. I think the NFL would rather have an unrefined, perhaps ugly start to the regular season because of the lack of preseason games than no games whatsoever to begin the season. So I think all eyes are on September 10th when the Chiefs are scheduled to host the Houston Texans.
Let's stick with the Chiefs then, Phil, because they've got a situation on their hands right now, as defensive tackle Chris Jones has come out and intimated that maybe he will go the Le'Veon Bell route while he is under the franchise tag. Do you think there is any realistic chance that Chris Jones would actually not step foot on a football field this year?
You know, I don't want to not take him at his word, because, you know, he was the one that invited this conversation, yep, right, with his tweet. At the same time, it's a ton of money to leave on the table. And I don't know that his leverage is the same as Le'Veon Bell. Now, there's a lot more behind Le'Veon Bell's backstory, right? I mean, it was the second tag, which just right away, I mean, the fact that you're on your second tag is, you know, you've already gone through a year of this. Chris Jones, second round pick, which that is the same as Le'Veon Bell. Like, I just wonder, I understand that what he wants ultimately is maybe, Aaron Donald light deal, like 5 years, $100 million, or 6 years, $120 million, something in that range. But you're a second round pick who has not made a whole lot of money relative to your production so far in your career. I tend to think that Chris Jones will be there when the games begin, or if the games begin, and he will make the money on the franchise tag if a long-term deal is not in place. But now we're 13 days away, and here we were thinking that Dak Prescott was really the only interesting franchise tag negotiation, and we've been reminded that there are many others that are surprising and interesting as we get down closer to July 15th.
Yeah, it's just a lot of money for him to walk away from. I agree with you, so we'll see what happens. Field, I can tell you're in your car, so how much money should I comfortably bet that you are driving from your residence somewhere in the Boston area to a little island off the coast of Cape Cod called Nantucket?
Well, Trey, you know, no money, because here's what I'm doing instead. I'm driving down to Bristol. I'm driving down to Bristol today to host NFL Live. So I will. I am in the car, guilty as charged there. So, maybe if I, well, you guys will probably be long gone by now. I'll say, but we'll do lunch in the cafeteria or something.
Yeah, a loss for you. I just thought for sure you were Nantucket bound ahead in the chicken box.
So check out Field Yates on NFL Live
today. Absolutely. So. The minister will be administering NFL information and justice. Safe drive, my friends. Hands on the wheel, attended to.
All right, guys. Take care. Thanks for having me on.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. It's very interesting where that went.
We've also turned the calendar from June to July, which means we're in the back half of 2020, which means we're in the second half of 2020, which means we need someone to give us the halftime speech we need to get us through what has been an awful start to 2020. I mean, let's be honest. If 2020 was a music festival, as I said during the break, I said it would be Suckfest, and you one-upped it to
Nocella.
Exactly right. It's been bad, so we need someone to put a positive spin on things going forward, and we also... Look, there's no bad reason or bad time to ever talk to this guy, so we're just going to bring him on anyway. It is the head coach of the Arizona State football team, my road dog, a legend in the NFL, longtime employee and teammate of ours at ESPN, the one and only Herm Edwards. Rhodey, God bless you. We need you now more than ever, my friend. What halftime speech would you give to America to make sure that 2020, July through December, is a hell of a lot better than January through June?
Well, I think we forgot that we were running a marathon, and we thought we were only running half a marathon. And once we got halfway, we said, it's over. No, not over. Bad error in judgment, right? And I just think that, you know, Trey, for us, because of how we have been raised in America, the freedoms and the rights we have, we went into the cave for about 2 months, and we just figured that, you know what? I'm good now. I can't stand no more. And it's gone. Not so fast. It's not gone. 50,000 cases in one day. That is significant. And we got to do a better job. And I think now we've gone back to almost where we were 2 months ago in the fact that there's a lot of closing of things. And that gets your attention. So hopefully that he'll get people's attention, and we'll figure this thing out.
And you were right in the middle of one of the states that is going through a lot of that right now. Arizona statewide shutdown, 30 days for a lot of gyms and establishments like that. So I'm curious, as they've rolled back some of those rules, how does that affect what you guys are trying to do on campus at Arizona State?
Well, right now, no students are on campus. Our players are coming in. We've got about 50-plus right about now. The next week, the freshman class will come in. So what we've done in most schools, I think, you know, they're with the weight coaches, not with the coaches. The coaches are just on Zooms with the meetings bar as far as the meetings go. But the workout pattern has been small groups of players in weight training and running. And that's where we're at right now. There's a second phase to it. We haven't gotten there yet by any stretch of the imagination. And it's tough lifting. It really is. And I think the players have bought into it. Very difficult, as you know, as far as how you enter the building. You get tested, you know, for temperature. Then they get a test once a week. If they don't show up at their test, they can't come in the building. It's a light staff in the building. Our whole staff's not even here yet. They're doing everything by Zoom. There might be four or five coaches at most in the building. So this is unusual. And I said it the first time, guys, when I was on your show and Wingo was on vacation somewhere playing golf like your dad is doing probably today, goalie, that this is not a physical distancing sport.
Yeah.
And we're trying to find a way to manage it. And I think every coach in the country is doing the same thing.
Rhodey, with that in mind, just so we're clear, even though Arizona as a state has shut down these gyms, are you still allowed to work out with the – are your players still allowed to work out on the facilities on campus?
We are. Okay. We are. And it's a light crew, as I said, and we've been monitoring our players, and they're doing a fabulous job of doing that. You know, I think the thing that people don't realize is this. You know, we talk about the athletes, but in college football especially, when you think about it, there's only 10 coaches. Well, if coaches go down, who's going to coach the team?
Yeah.
I mean, you got 110 players. You only got 10 coaches. Who's going to coach the team if the coaches go down? That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of parameters we're dealing with here. And there was one Arizona player, Coach, and I never want you to speak on behalf of anybody else's players. I understand that.
Sure.
But there was one Arizona player that said, if we're not allowing students on campus, why are we here? Was sort of the thought that he was allowed. So what would you say to someone who said, hey, students are allowed on campus and over safety concerns, so why are players at Arizona State and other players allowed to be on campus?
I think at the measures that we're taking, and he makes a great point, because students are not on campus. It's a small, selected group, and this is why you can do what we're trying to do. I mean, working out, there's only eight guys in a group, Trey, with a strength coach, and there is social separation, even in all. So we're trying to do that, but he makes a point. When the students come in, how is that all going to look? You know, you can like the NBA. They're keeping them in a bubble right now. It's all fun in the bubble, but eventually, you got to get out of the bubble.
Yeah,
you know, it's all protected right now, but eventually, you got to go in the real world. And how's that going to look? And I think no one knows right now.
Talking to Herm Edwards with us, Arizona State head football coach here on Golic and Wingo. And Herm, with that in mind, as you've brought athletes back to campus, as you've gone through, as you said, the testing, some of these protocols here, would you say it's made you more confident in what we're getting ready to do with the upcoming season, less confident, or about where you were?
Kind of where I'm at. I think as you go through every phase, you go, okay, that's a checkpoint. But all it takes, here's the main issue. All it takes is, for instance, the locker room. You guys have been in a locker room. Right now in our locker room, you can't have two starters by each other in the locker room. Because if one guy's affected, the other guy's out too. So now you got to separate the locker room. We got to use two locker rooms. We have an adjacent locker room where the visiting locker room is. We're going to put 40 to 50 players in that one, because we're trying to space it out. And you can't have two starters sitting together.
Yeah.
Right? There's so many things you got to think about every day, rightly so, because we're trying to protect the players. And here again, I'm trying to protect my coaching staff and all the players that deal with coaches. How about what if your trainers go down? Who's going? Yeah, how does that work? I mean, so yeah. All these things, you know, people don't realize this is a lot of stuff going into this, because you're trying to protect everybody, right?
Well, so. Yeah. There certainly are. I mean, Ravens head coach John Harbaugh said the restrictions the NFL has been putting on to try and work out with the virus are basically humanly impossible. And then you multiply that by a bunch, because you got a lot more players on a college team than you do on an NFL squad. But, Herman, you mentioned the coaches, and I find that interesting, because the NBA, as they're going back into that bubble, raised some concerns about some of the older coaches in the league. The two names they brought up were Greg Popovich with San Antonio and Mark D'Antoni in Houston. You are in better shape than almost every human alive. People just not understand that about Herm Edwards, okay? He gets up every day and attacks the day like nobody I've ever seen get up and get ready and go through their workouts to get going. But you are also a guy, Coach, who's in his 60s. So when you hear the stats with this virus, and that it does tend to skew more dramatically at some points towards older people, what is your level of concern, not only about your players, but about yourself in this process?
Well, I'm aware of that, but I also I'm aware of the fact that what's more important to me, Trey, and you know this, is my family, is my girls and my wife. And right. I've already had discussions with Leah that if this thing continues to go, that I might not, you know, if they come to Arizona, they're in Carmel, obviously, right now at the house, Trey.
Right.
And if they come here and then school starts for the girls, that's one thing. But if they go online, they'll stay in Carmel. If school does start for the girls, they will come here, and I might stay next door at the hotel, because I don't want to affect them if I get it.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a lot of things you got to think about, you know, and my family comes first. And you know, I'm going to protect my family. I'm going to do that. And I want all these coaches to do that. I mean, that's important because, you know, it's no one's, you don't get mad at a player or a person if they contract it, you know, and because a lot of times you don't know. I mean, you know, you're doing everything you can. And you still, right now, you got five people, somebody's going to have in Arizona.
Wow.
Okay. That's the number. And so you're just, you know, every day you're just going, okay, here we go. This is what we're living with.
Herm, I'm curious. You mentioned family and all this as we wrap up here with you. One thing that affected both your football family and our work family here was what happened with Jordan Clark and some of his teammates around Arizona, an instance where him and a couple of his teammates were called a racial slur by a patron of a restaurant. Sure. And we talked to Ryan Clark since then about it from his perspective. But as a coach, what was that like for you going through that and the conversations you had with Jordan and his other teammates about this?
Well, I addressed it, and I told him this, too. I said, you know, the first thing we get, you know, you got to remember this. Right now, America's in a place where there's people that are nervous with the social movement and everything else, you know. And I think, you know, with pressure, I've always said this. With pressure, whatever you do in life comes out. You know, you react to pressure. And you find out a lot about people. You just do. And how they react to all this. And I told him this. I said, you know, what's great about this is that it's a life experience for you that you can remember. And moving forward now, you got to think of it this way, too. And I took the other side of it. I said, can you imagine you walk up to somebody's car in a drive-thru and, you know, you're trying to get some, you know, first of all, if you didn't have the car, just ride a bike, okay, because it's a drive-thru. And you walk up to somebody, they don't know you, and it's at night, they don't know your intentions right away, right? And so what if someone would have had a gun and thought maybe you were trying to rob them? How that would have turned out, right? I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah,
so
not well.
I just think, no, and so and when I told them that, they looked at me and I said, you know, I'm not saying you guys are wrong. I'm just saying you put yourself in a spot to where you don't want to be in that spot. We got to think this thing through. America right now is at this moment because of the, you know, of the social movement. You know, you see a lot of things happening that in the history of me living in America, I never thought this would happen. Guys, they're tearing down monuments. They're going back 50 years in America history, which rightly so, I get it. And I've watched it, and they're tearing this stuff down. And anything that you've done in the dark is coming to the light. And they're holding you accountable for that. And I said, Trey, I say that all the time. What we do in the dark comes to the light.
That's exactly right.
And when you
right.
press it, it's your resume. And people are looking for stuff now. And if you're part of that, you're going to get called out.
It certainly feels like everybody's on edge. There's no question about it. So that's
we know that. No, Trey, we know that, man. And you can just feel it in the air. Yeah. You can just feel. There's this sense of what's going on. You know, what is happening? Why is this? It's affecting everybody right now. Right, wrong, or indifferent.
Yeah.
And hopefully for the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach Rhody, always good to talk to you, man. Best to you and the family. And hope everybody stays safe. And hopefully somewhere down the road, we'll get talking about the great job you're doing with that Sun Devil program as the recruiting classes just keep going up and up every year. As I always said, anyone wants to win a living room, send Herm Edwards in there. Case closed. It's done. Rhody, always good to talk to you, man. Be safe, okay?
Love you guys. All right. Love you guys, man. You guys stay safe, Wingo. Go
all right, thanks,
brother. Stay safe, daddy. I said hi, man.
Will do. Thanks, coach.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.